This conference is being recorded.
Okay, Andreas, go ahead.
Yes. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, it is with pleasure that I welcome you all to the third teleconference of the International Society of Life Settlement Professionals. I'm Andreas Haus, the founder of the society, an independent and investor-oriented team of top life settlement professionals. Today, I welcome an audience from all over the United States of America, Europe, and the Middle East, representing fund managers, law firms, advisors, marketing firms, and high net worth investors. Let me thank George Polzer and Charmaine Vages for the excellent organization of this event. Following our previous international teleconferences this year, the International Society of Life Settlement Professionals is becoming the go-to resource for marketing advice on investor orientation, and a growing number of introductions among peers inside our exclusive network have been successful. In our constant conversations with providers and investors, many agree that only a clear vision and dedication to be investor-oriented will attract the necessary capital to the life settlement asset class to assure further success and growth. We deal with more demanding and very intelligent investors asking for cutting-edge and transparent investment opportunities. The Today teleconference serves as an overview on institutional investors in Europe, namely pension funds, interested in investing in life settlements. This teleconference will be recorded and assembled in a media library on our website available to members. I am proud at that point to announce our speaker, Jonas Martinsson. Jonas is co-founder and chief executive officer of Res Capital, based in Stockholm, Sweden. Jonas has an outstanding international financial background and has worked with major banks throughout Europe, focusing on selling and structuring derivative products to European institutional investors. Jonas shares ISLSP investor focus and will talk about his experience from a recent roadshow among institutional investors. I wish you an interesting conference. Jonas? Jonas?
Thank you. Yes, hello?
Okay, Jonas, please go ahead.
Okay, am I on the call now?
You are on the call.
Okay, thank you so much. Then I'll just recommence in case my previous... yes, I'm very pleased to be speaking today. Just wanted to thank you, George and Andreas, for the opportunity and also for sharing my views on speaking to Northern European investors, mainly in the Benelux region, UK and Scandinavia. We are in the process of launching a Luxembourg-based fund, and I think some of the feedback we receive from investors could be of interest to other involvements in the life settlement sector. We have been speaking recently to insurance companies, pension funds, family offices, and a lot of these are currently not investing in life settlements, and generally speaking, we would say that 70 to 80% of the institutional investors are only aware of life settlements to a small degree, which we view as something being fairly positive in the sense that these are investors who have not previously invested in life settlements. They are now interested in investing in life settlement because of the uncorrelated nature of the returns. We have generally also found that the investment climate is getting better. People who were 6 months ago not considering doing very much, I think the general investment climate now is much more positive, although I think everyone in the life settlement sector may see that there have been no new inflows of capital yet, but we think that will slowly change as investors begin to invest again. General perception of life settlements, I would say, is rather positive when we speak to investors who have a higher degree of knowledge, such as actuarial background or having perhaps researched the market. Many of the past problems we've seen in the life settlement markets have gone away. Issues such as transparency very important issues now are being dealt with. We've also found that investors, to some degree, find it difficult to place life settlements within a box. And does it belong to private equity? Is it a hedge fund? Is it alternative investments? And this has been slightly problematic with larger institutions who tend to have departments already set up doing either private equity or hedge funds quite often they find where should life settlements belong. Is it as illiquid as private equity or is it somewhere in between? And we found quite a number of institutions where they don't really find the right department for investing in life settlements. I think that's generally just the case with larger institutions. I think small institutions have much more flexibility and tend to look at investing in assets they like. Generally speaking, we first think that asset class has to become accepted by investors. And as I stated earlier, I think probably 7 to 8 out of 10 meetings, investors have previously not really heard about life settlements. So we spend a lot of time on educating the investor base, explaining about the market, participants, different ways of accessing and investing through derivative instruments, through funds, through sourcing policies directly. We spend a lot of time in these post-Madoff days on due diligence. We find ourselves spending a lot of time talking about the legal structure, service providers used for our fund, but I think that's also a very general theme that investors are putting a lot more emphasis on the structure, the service providers involved, the custodian involved, the people involved. And we certainly find ourselves talking a lot about our model, our quantitative model, and of course, issues which are specific to the life settlement market also. Where is the liquidity? Is it more like private equity that I'm locked up for 10 years? Or is it somewhere in between equities bonds which are liquid and private equity which is very illiquid? Where would one, view, should I view life settlements as perhaps if the markets are back to normal, there is some liquidity in the tertiary market, or is that an illusion? Transparency is an ongoing theme. We know that in the early days of the life settlement market, sometimes the seller of the policy did not know exactly what fees were paid to brokers and other intermediaries. Most of our investors feel that this is extremely important. Transparency throughout the whole transaction is of extreme importance. And this is something that ILMA and other institutional organizations are obviously promoting, and I think it's becoming more and more generally accepted throughout the market, although we find pockets of resistance. But from an institutional investor point of view, it is a risk that they are not prepared to take that policies were sourced without fees being properly disclosed. We also find ourselves talking a lot about valuation of policies, mark to model, mark to market. Is there a market? Not really. How would you then be able to trust the mark to model? How does the model work for each investment manager? Those are issues where we spend a lot of time explaining about our views, our thoughts, and in our case, we've chosen to have an independent auditor verify the net asset value for the fund and also to verify our model. And we put on quite a number of safety hurdles, so to say, which has been a requirement from the institutional investor base, where they want to assure that there are independent parties verifying what we are doing. And I think generally the service providers that one has to choose when dealing with institutions, it tends to be larger institutions, well-known names. And I think also the structure itself, the legal structure, it has to be in a jurisdiction where it works from a U.S. withholding tax point of view. We are required by our custodian bank, our investors, to produce tax opinions for every investor country. And that's just a requirement from the custodian bank and from the investors. So I think we've found that the requirements from institutional investors are very high. But it's also been something very positive because I think that will drive the market towards becoming more institutionalized. We will see more inflows from institutional investors since the fund structures are becoming more similar to other asset classes. We find that we spend a lot of time talking about past mistakes in the life settlement market, talking about the problems with life estimates, the medical underwriters, how do they perform, what is their past performance, do they have other business, are there conflicts of interest, why is the market so fragmented, is there a common standard for medical underwriters? Is this expected to be the case in the near future? These are some of the questions that institutional investors would ask from us. Tax is another major issue where we find increasingly that the choice of jurisdiction is something we discuss and spend a lot of time on. From European investor point of view, the two jurisdictions that are widely used would be Luxembourg and Ireland. They are well-known jurisdictions within the European Union, so they pose no problem to, and of course, no other European Union country would pose any problem as well. But I think those are the two jurisdictions we've seen other life settlement funds launch from. But we are aware of structures out of Switzerland, Sweden, and obviously from other offshore jurisdictions as well. But I think from an institutional point of view, choice of jurisdiction is more important perhaps than for other investors. As I mentioned earlier, we get quite positive feedback from educated investors. When we have meetings with actuaries investors who are used to dealing in esoteric asset classes, and probably would include life settlements still in the more esoteric class, we find that the feedback from investors in those cases is positive. They are clearly appealed by the uncorrelated returns. They see the problems that the life settlement market has faced in the past, but they also see the progress which is being made and the quality of the service providers, the quality of the custodian banks, etc. The market is becoming more mainstream. mainstream in their eyes, which in their view is something positive and good. We do think that it would be quite beneficial for the market if there were more independent fund managers. We generally think that that would be something positive for the market with more offerings out there. So we do believe that the awareness of life settlements will grow as there are more products being offered to the market. And generally, we've seen quite a few retail offerings in Europe, fewer institutional offerings, and I think that's slowly going to change. These were some thoughts, and I would obviously welcome any questions and feedback from people on the call.
Okay, thank you very much, Jonas. Please allow for one first question. I totally agree on what you presented here. This is in large part the same experience we did in the last 6 years in Europe, serving Southern European countries as being a neutral advisor. Which kind of structured products, in your view and from your experience, did institutional investors, namely pension funds, like most?
I think what we are seeing is a slight dislike of any product which is structured. It's pretty much the feedback we get is more back to basics, plain vanilla. The pension funds and insurance companies either prefer to source the policies themselves if they feel they have the in-house knowledge, or they prefer to invest through a fund. I think derivative structures such as swaps, there are certainly benefits in them, but the feedback that we receive is that there is also, once again, then relying on one counterparty and not being able to perhaps control one's destiny and being too much in the locked up to one counterparty. And also, I guess, credit risk would play an issue there where, you know, this was not an issue a couple of years back, but I think it is an issue now.
Okay, wonderful. So I think, Jonas, you are together with your colleagues, Russell Nell and Andreas Ametrin as well. So both gentlemen are obviously invited to answer any questions from the audience. And at that point, I would like to welcome Madame Quinn Nguyen, our next prospective advisory board member, who will be leading and starting our question and answer session. Quinn?
Hello, everybody. My name is Quinn from DQN Global Capital in London. Our firm is an advisory firm to family offices globally. We have never recommended life settlement to our clients, but we would consider to take this product on board. So I have very basic question in terms of due diligence. What are the key questions regarding the legal structure, service platform, and custodian which your institutional clients have normally raised, and what are their expectations?
It's Jonas Martinsson here. I think on our side, we mainly speak to European institutions, so we had a choice between two jurisdictions, which was basically Ireland or Luxembourg. On our side, we chose Luxembourg, and the structure is what's known as Fonds Commun de Placement, or FCP, which is a transparent structure. So the end investor will end up using their own double tax treaty in their home country. So if you have an investor based in the UK, they will use the UK-US double tax treaty. And French investors use the French-US double tax treaty. And that structure, this transparent Luxembourg FCP, works well for onshore institutional investors.
And in terms of service platform and custodian, the similar questions, Jonas.
Yeah, I mean, we basically, we have, there are very There are a few larger banks offering these services, and in our case, we have chosen to work with Caisse Bank Luxembourg, which is a bank which is 50-50 owned by Natixis and Crédit Agricole of France. And they are the largest custodian bank in many markets in Europe. It's a pure custodian bank, so no investment banking activities. It's a pure custodian bank, which many of our investors feel is quite important, AA rated, and the sub-custodian as well as Fargo in the United States, where the policies will be held by Wells Fargo, which obviously there are, of course, other custodian banks which are equally good, and we've just had good experiences with these two counterparties in the past.
Thank you. What is the length of time is needed for this due diligence, Jonas?
We generally, when we have the first meeting, it tends to be, I would say, generally, it takes about 6 months for institutional investors to make up their mind. And we are often required to produce a lot of independent research on life settlements and in general first in order for the institution to decide whether or not they like life settlements as an asset class. And once they made the decision that they like life settlements as an asset class, then they would then go on and actually look at how can you invest through a swap or a fund or actually source policies directly through the secondary market.
In one of the message you mentioned earlier about the length of investment, long-term, illiquid, like private equity, and you did mention about 10 years, etc., I would like to clarify this point. Investing in a fund like Life Settlement, what is the lock-up period in general on the market, and why is this 10 years was mentioned? Because it seemed to be so long.
That's. I apologize if I made that was my reference to private equity. I think that life settlements is somewhere in between, where most there are closed-end funds where you are locked up for a number of years. We very much view this as an asset class which is suitable for investors taking an investment horizon which is at least 3-4 years and actually longer. So. Taking an investment horizon of 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and even longer. Our investors are long-term investors, and in most cases they will remain invested for 10, 11, 12 years in the asset class. And the aim really is to provide a very large, diversified pool of insurance policies so that investors benefit from a good diversification. And the vision really is to create a very sizable fund with a pan-European investor base, which is kind of mostly obviously welcome investors from any part of the world, but that's kind of like our reach. So
sure. All right, bye, buddy.
My very last question is how does the performance of an investment in a life settlement fund in the past, say, 5 years, I think the market probably developed in the past 5 years, compared to the other time, compared to other asset class. So, because I have the impression that increasingly, based on your presentation, increasingly the product life settlement become more popular to institutional investors. So how does the performance compare in the past years?
I would say that the performance in the past years has been quite bad in some products which were probably not properly structured or properly managed. And you may have heard also about changing life estimates. So I think over-relying on publicly available medical underwriting information can be quite dangerous. I think what we're seeing more and more in the market is proprietary medical underwriters being utilized by one fund only, and a lot more emphasis is placed on getting both the bottom-up, the in looking at each policy and getting the life estimate correct, but also, let's say, a top-down approach where one would focus a lot more on different life estimate buckets, look at disease categories, for example, so that one has a diversified pool. So I do think that some of the problems we have seen in the past with underperforming funds have not only been due to the fact that life estimates have changed, but I think also they've been constructed in not in a good way, really. So I think there certainly has been underperformance, and I think the market has now matured and it is at the stage where I think we're seeing more and more professional fund managers not relying on information which is only publicly available and hoping that is going to be, you know. So I think it's changed, and I think now the timing is actually quite good for new investors, and obviously there are some investors who are suffering from the yields going up and the policies which were bought maybe 12 months ago. Those investors suffer both from having the life estimate being longer and also the returns having increased for policies which are bought in today's market.
Okay.
Thank you,
Jonas Quinn. Thank you very much for starting the Q&A session at that point. We would like to open up now to all attendees. Please feel free to ask your questions. And again, Jonas, if you think it is appropriate, your associates, Russell and Andreas, are most welcome to answer questions as well.
This is Ken Klein at Fair Market Life Settlements in New York. Can you hear me all right?
Hi, Kevin. Yes, we can. Thank you very much for joining.
Thank you. Two quick questions, if I might. One, Jonas, what yield are you anticipating to receive out of the secondary market here in the United States for your fund? And secondly, what method of origination of the assets are you thinking of using here in the United States?
I don't know if Russell would like to answer some of those questions. Are you on? Do I have Russell Nell? No, okay. Then I think we will be originating through a couple of providers in the United States with whom we have relationships since a number of years. And we are aiming to pay a lower upfront fee than is the market standard, and instead we would like to share the performance fee with our providers, thus aligning the interest with the provider and our investors, since we feel there's been maybe a lack of alignment of interest in the past. So, I mean, current yields in the market, people tell me that it's roughly right now anywhere from 13 to 16%. So, I mean, depending on whose model you use. So, I mean, we will...
Thank you. That's fine. I concur with your structure to try to better align the interests of the originator and your fund investors, and I think you're quite spot on in terms of the current yield environment.
Okay. Any further questions?
Robert Gatti, Life Policy Group.
Robert.
Hi. What would you say to, I guess, detractors from the approach of using, not using independent life expectancy calculations, but yet using some sort of in-house model to determine a life expectancy? It could be seen as a sort of a conflict of interest without having the independent valuations provided.
I don't see the conflict of interest, sorry. How do you mean?
Well, in a sense that if you're creating your own valuations for life expectancies in-house, it could be seen as being a conflict rather than using an independent third-party valuation methodology for life expectancies.
In our case, what we will be using is an external medical underwriter, which is publicly not available. So it's an independent firm providing an independent medical life estimate to us.
Okay.
It's just not going to be available to the market. And
okay.
Then we have in-house actuaries with experience in senior mortality ready to challenge that. So that's kind of our in-house focus is more on the actuarial experience, and then the LE provider would be external but independent.
Okay.
Okay, the next question, please.
Yes, this is Jim Sennett with Life Settlement Advisory Group. Very, very well put points. I think the question I would have is with respect to the in-house medical underwriting, which, by the way, I think is a proprietary advantage and necessary. Are you also, in terms of when you look towards the possible tertiary trading of the policies, though, are you also obtaining sort of market life settlements such that you have it in the file and are in a position to sort of validate your in-house underwriting?
Yeah, we will in all cases always have one other external publicly available LE. So from the major underwriters, yes. We may well have one or two, but we will always have at least one.
Good. Yeah, it seems to me that would be the only downside, I guess, to the in-house underwriting is that you have to justify to the rest of the world, you know, what pricing you have if in fact at some point you want to trade the asset.
No, I mean, I think if you want to trade the assets, you would have to get a publicly available medical underwriter to re-underwrite in that case. So, I mean, I think that's we may well, in all cases, the fund is required to have two medical underwriters in order to purchase a policy.
Very good, thank you.
Okay, your next question, please. Is there any further questions from the attendees, please? Okay, Quinn, would you like to close the question and answer session? If there's any further question from your side?
At this moment, I do not have further question, but perhaps we can stay in touch with other attendees in case there are more questions or also questions from my side to other investors who have already invested in this product because perhaps my client want to hear the experience of other institutional investors before they consider investing in this new product, new for themselves, not new in the market. So thank you so much for organizing that.
Thank you, Quinn. This is a very good point, and it allows me to announce that in the very near future, we will open up an investor platform under the guidance of ISLSP as being really investor-oriented and independent. And further to schedule for one-on-one conversations with Jonas as well as the other attendees, you please feel free to contact us at info@islsp.org or just call me directly in the U.S. at 602-904-5746. Looking forward to welcome you at our fourth international teleconference in the month of May. I am Andreas Haus, the International Society of Life Settlement Professionals. Thank you very much.
Thank you.